Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 30 of Edu All-Stars. We are glad to have everybody back with us as our first episode of 2014. My name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-host today...
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me at I Am Kessler on Twitter. Super excited to be here. We got episode 30, which is like starting out 2014 with a bang. Got tons of great guests coming up. So super excited to get back at it. We haven't done this in 3 weeks, and it feels like about 3 months. So let's
do it. Chris and I were just talking earlier about it. It's like, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. And then we're like, wait, no, it's just been a few weeks, but it's felt a lot longer. But we are really excited to have Jerry Blumengarten here with us today. Jerry has taught in the New York City school system for 32 years. He's wrote curriculum for his school district, the New York City Board of Education, and Open Doors, a school business partnership. He started Cybraries Man's educational websites in April 11, 1999, and has an effort to catalog the internet for students, educators, and parents. So Jerry, thanks for coming on with us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Happy, healthy New Year to everyone.
Good.
Yes, Happy New Year to you as well. You have been one of our wish list people since we started Edu All Stars, so we are very glad that we were able to get you on and get to talk to you today. So we appreciate you giving us some time.
Are you ready to rumble?
Well, we'll go ahead and jump right into things. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in education?
You know, I still don't know what I want to do in life. Isn't that scary? That's a good question. Really technology, I think, and how I got interested in technology. I guess it started in early 1960s when I was in the eighth grade, and we had a language lab for French. Anyway, I was really intrigued by this way of learning. This was something that we'd never had. All we had in those days was film strips and occasional 16-millimeter, you know, movie thing. I said, this is great. But that was the end of it for many years. And until 1967, I was in a sociology class at the University of Pittsburgh, held the Pitt. And the professor said, I want you to write a term paper on the future. And I thought about it, and I wrote a paper on my prediction of teaching machines in education. Well, let me tell you, the professor gave me the world to see. He made me get up in front of the class and defend this. And I said, look, in every class you have kids at all different levels of learning. You want kids to be up to the standards, so they'll need more remediation. Use these machines and whatnot, and, you know, to get them up to par. And meanwhile, don't hold back the advanced students. Let them go as far as they wanted with these machines as well. So I said, I'm not getting rid of a teacher. I'm having the teacher work with all these different levels of instruction. So I don't know. I guess it got the ball rolling because the following year, 1960, I decided to walk around campus with my MAD primer. Now, MAD magazine was very popular in those days with Alfred E. Newman. And people used to laugh and said, hey, Jerry, you got your MAD primer? And I said, no, it's not what you think. It was the Michigan Algorithmic Decoder. I was learning how to program a computer in 1968. Now, in those days, to do the programming, you had to use the punch cards. You had to type in on punch cards your program. You had to take your punch cards, bring them to the computer office, and come back an hour or two later, and they'd run your program off. Now, if you made one silly little typing error or did something incorrectly, your program wouldn't run. So it taught me to be extremely careful. But I stopped it. I should have continued programming at that time. But I started teaching in 1969 in an inner-city school, and for the next 32 years, I saw everything imaginable. Some people getting killed, or bullet holes in our windows, cracking, stepping over crack vials on the way into school, etc. We did have a lot of our students and teachers arrested and taken out of school for many different offenses. So it was a very tough environment I grew up in terms of education. I started as a day-to-day sub, and I worked every day because so many teachers in our school were absent. When I finally got my first class, a ninth grade social studies class, I started teaching about world geography, and I immediately saw they had no conception of the world or anything to do with geography. So I decided to write a curriculum about their neighborhood, start from there. And I did a lot of research. I went out into the community. One old lady came to the school in with a plastic bag with a bank publication that was done like 30 years before. And she said, please take care of this. And it was so great because it taught me so much about the history of that area. I worked with a local reverend in a Dutch Reformed church, and he explained how it was built. And the Dutch settlers had their graves there. So when I took the kids there, they saw the names of the streets where they lived on. They got really excited about their neighborhood. I used the census because I wanted to show them. One child said, my mother's, you know, a nursing attendant. And I said, look, see the health workers here in this census tract of where you live? Your mother is one of those numbers. So I personalized the census. Sure. Nowadays, it's so much easier to do this because you can have the access through the internet.
Right.
But you should start with the kids knowing about their area, what's an area, the history of the area, the services, et cetera, in their area. Of course, I was excessed from my first school because of seniority. And this is after I helped win the New York City track championship, and I was really at the top of my game. I walked into my next school the first week. I was went into the teacher's room. It was all crowded except for one space on a couch. I sat down on the couch, and someone said, you can't sit there. That's so-and-so's seat. That was my welcome to a school. That's why when people get on Twitter now, I always want to welcome them because I don't want them to be shut out, and I always did that with my colleagues. So it's very important that we welcome the new people that come on to Twitter. I can go on and on. What do you want me to stop?
Now we'll keep going. You talked a little bit about moving into the just writing curriculum, getting out of the classroom. But it sounds like you also...
No, I wasn't out of the classroom.
You were still writing it while you were in the classroom.
I was in the classroom.
You also wrote for the New York City Board of Education. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So talk a little bit about that process.
That process was the ball and chain process. We only had to do that. We had to go down after work. I had to, you know, go on the subway to the downtown to the Board of Ed, and basically had to do the work right there and then.
So you were doing it while you were still teaching?
Oh yeah, after school, sure.
Oh my gosh, were you getting paid for it?
During summers, I wrote a lot of curriculum during the summers. That was my summer job in many areas. Oh, okay. That's another great story. We had a very forward-thinking superintendent, the only one of nine that I had. I worked on the. Who was forward-thinking, who let us write curriculum, be creative and whatnot. And we wrote a seventh-grade social studies one, an eighth grade, a fourth grade, and we were working on a sixth-grade curriculum when this superintendent left, and a new one came in with all these great things. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, but he stopped us from writing this curriculum. Now, I was a quiet guy at the time, but I decided to have a meeting with him, and I was working with two other people who happened to be assistant principals, writing these curriculum. Not only did we write lesson plans, but we provided a workbook for the students to use. So I got to use my artwork, and it was great. But anyway, the superintendent starts off with, oh, we just came back from a retreat with all the administrators. It was wonderful. I said, listen, I'm not here to talk about a retreat. We're here to talk about the kids. I know you had a great time. It doesn't matter what you do up in your level because it never gets down to the teachers or the kids. Here we're doing something for the children that they're using in all the schools. And his favorite expression was, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I said to him, you know something, Mr. Lilly? You've thrown out the baby and the bathwater. Well, he called my principal and says, what's the matter with Blumengarten? Of course, before I left the superintendent, I said, listen, it's obvious you don't care about the kids, and I'm going to be here longer than you. So why don't you just let us finish what we were started? But he never did, but he was gone in a couple of years. So.
Yeah. Huh.
Wow. So when did you realize that you were ready to leave the classroom and step outside of that environment?
I never left the classroom.
So you retired as a teacher.
20 years of teaching, I was asked to become the teacher librarian, and that was wonderful. That was a great experience. Because not only was I was able to teach all classes, all levels, because the previous librarian didn't want kids in the library. I said, bilingual, come on in. Special ed, come on in. Just come in. I'll work with you. I'll do any kind of lessons. I used a lot of cooperative education. And I started a website. That's the start of my website. I wanted one place where my students can go safely to find information on all different topics. I started as a general website. But I wanted a website that changed, because most websites are very static. I want to teach us to be able to find things for that, let's say, month or whatnot. And I've continued that, as you see on my site. Every month has different sites, and the following month to help teachers prepare ahead of time. When I first started the website, I developed a school's scavenger hunt for the site. And the students would have to go on the site and find answer 10 questions. If they completed that, I gave them a certificate, which they love. Kids love. This is middle school, and the kids love certificates. And I put their names up on a chart in the library, and I put their first name and last initial on the website. One day, a teacher came in, and he was looking for books in the science section. I said, "Hey, Tony, what do you need?" He said, "Oh, Jerry, I'm going to do a unit on plate tectonics." I said, "Tony, next time you have a free period, come back to the library and see me." Right after he left, I started a page on earth science. That was the first subject area page I had, because I had all the science together, all the language arts. I said, I should have separate pages, make it really easy. If a child is learning about the American Revolution, let him have an American Revolution page. Studying biology, a biology page, you know, et cetera, calculus, calculus page, or algebra. And when he came back, I said, "Hey, Tony, tell you what. Why don't we do a cooperative learning unit on plate tectonics? Have some kids come down to me previous to this, and we'll gather materials, and we'll give each kid a different plate to study." That's how I know all about the Juan de Fuca plate. How many people know about that, right?
I do. I'm a science teacher. I do.
So I set up different sections in the library. They use the atlases. They use the computers. They use the science books and whatnot. And it was a great learning. And then I took off and I did all kinds of cooperative learning activities with all subject areas.
I have actually been to the Juan de Fuca plate, so I'm familiar with the Juan de Fuca. You talk, you know, a little bit about the website already, cyberryman.com, in case you haven't or are aware of that. Most of the connected educators know that. If you're not on Twitter, though, and want to find a website that literally has something about everything, cyberryman.com. I don't know if you're willing to share this information or not, but what would you be willing to talk about the traffic that website gets in on a monthly basis or a yearly basis? Or
I don't look at the statistics.
Okay, all right. I'm assuming
I don't care. It's not
ton.
Important to me, statistics and whatnot. I'm just interested in trying to get as much information out. And the problem is I have a serious issue. I'm a constant learner.
Yeah.
And I'd like everyone to be a constant learner and not wait for professional development. Learn things on your own. Mm-hmm. When I started this website for Angel Fire, it was free. And no ads. The only ads you saw were in the editing process. I taught myself HTML. When I first got my first computer, it was an Apple IIe in the early 1980s. Because of my writing, I was tired of, you know, typing out everything and trying to use the correct type, etc. And I convinced my wife, it was expensive at the time to buy it, to get a computer. And I was one of the first in my schools to put my lessons and my tests on a computer. And people were saying, "Jerry, what are you doing that for?" I says, "You'll see." You know, after you give a lesson one night, you can go back and make the changes and whatnot, and you'll always have it for the next time, because we had a hand in our lesson plans every week, and it became so much easier to work on a computer. But I taught myself AppleWorks. I think that was one of the greatest programs, AppleWorks.
Yeah, I remember AppleWorks.
To merge a database, I taught myself how to do a database, so when I became the school librarian, they wouldn't give us the funds to start online catalogs, so I made up my own databases of the books in my library. So I know exactly where things were.
Now, your website is very fondly known in a lot of the connected educator circles as the site that has everything. Did you ever imagine your site becoming what it is today?
No, I never, you know, I don't look ahead that far. I just wanted a place where people can get information pretty easily and pretty quickly. And I don't like top 10 lists or best lists, because what's best for one may not be best for another.
Sure. Right.
But I'll try to give as many good sites. You pick out the ones you want to use that you find the best.
So you've also done quite a bit of speaking at different conferences and events, and I know that Todd was telling me earlier that you guys actually met at ISTE last year here. Has speaking in front of crowds been something that maybe came natural to you, or is something you learned along the way? Or
we're teachers. We all That's have to get up in front. What I strongly suggest for new teachers, they take a public speaking class. They should have that as a prerequisite. They really should.
You know, I would say that most teachers do. You know, we're always up in front of the class, but there are tons of teachers that cannot stand to give up and do a public speech, especially in front of their peers.
I think it's because they're in front of their peers.
Their peers, right.
Hey, I used to be the same way. I can speak in front of kids all day long, but I used to be terrified. Right. And especially, I think, you know, when I was, in my early 20s, it was like, who's going to want to listen to some young kid talk about it when they've been in education forever? And so I was very self-conscious. I've become a little more comfortable now, but...
Aren't you still in your early 20s, Todd?
No, I'm pushing 30.
Old man.
Yep. She was older than that.
Well, Jerry, after you retired, you moved to Cape Cod, but you continued to be involved with educational things like getting funding for a new library and visiting a local district curriculum. It sounds like being retired is something that's very difficult for you. Do you ever miss the actual classroom full of children, or do you kind of see what you're doing now as your new classroom?
I still go into classrooms.
Really?
Yes. When I wrote my educational activity booklets, I wanted to show students that I use the same process that they do in their writing. And it's interesting because I used to go into classrooms because I got the artwork from one of the first books that I wrote, The Energy Kids, and I'd show them the whole process, and I'd show them they have to do the same thing I'm doing. I'm doing the same thing that they do, you know, researching, outlining, rough draft, etc. And I show them the whole process. Well, one time I tweeted out a couple of years ago that I just had a great experience. I went into a classroom. I gave my writing presentation. Someone from California tweeted me, said, Jerry, I wish you could be in California. Well, I don't sleep at night. And I'm saying, there's got to be a way to do this. So how am I going to find out? Very simply, I contacted Shelley Terrell, and I said, Shelley, you got to help me with this. He said, oh, Jerry, no problem. Why don't you Skype with me? You know, she was in Germany at the time, and I remember Skyping her. She was in her pajamas and whatnot. And I explained what I did. She said, Jerry, that's easy. Upload your presentation to a Mixbook. I never heard of a Mixbook. Mixbook is a free kind of presentation site. Now, you can, if you want, once it's all the way up there, you can buy a copy of your book, which I eventually did. But now I will Skype or Google Hangout with, I've done this in 21 states, and I've done it in Australia, I've done it in Honduras and Canada, and I am able to get into class, so I still am getting into classrooms, and I love it. I love doing it personally, but I can still do it through Google Hangout or Skype.
Yeah, it's now, totally
you
comfortable.
Mentioned you don't sleep much. Do you ever sleep? Because I feel like you're everywhere all the time.
No, I don't sleep much. I do sleep some. But I'll tell you, I work out. I think that's very important for teachers. I've always had an excellent attendance record, and I attribute to the fact that I kept myself physically fit and I ate properly.
Yeah, that's good. So I know you're also a commentator on the BAM radio. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, whenever they have a show they think I will fit in well with, I moderate on whatever they want me to, whatever topic that they have that I think I have experience to do.
Uh huh. So you'll actually co-host with someone else or moderate?
I don't co-host. I'm just
moderate.
You know, I'm just a commentator or
gotcha.
A guest, gotcha. Really.
Okay. Cool.
That's cool. Well, you know. The second part of our interview usually focuses a little bit on more reflecting over you personally. And so if you could think back to your early years in your career and give yourself some advice now seeing what you've been through and where you are, what advice would you give yourself?
I lost the audio.
Oh, sorry. If you could go back to the early years in your career and give yourself some advice now being where you are now, what would you tell yourself?
Okay, I think the most valuable thing that I did that all new teachers should do is I was lucky. The new principal, I walked into a school. He saw how green I was. He had me go down to a class, happened to be in the basement. I walked in there. It was like a magical mystery tour. It was amazing. This guy had decorated his class so well. I watched him teach, and he was amazing. he'd walk around the room and every eye would be focused on him. He was like an actor. And what he did next was amazing. He said, Jerry, why don't you join me for lunch? I have two other colleagues who we have lunch with every day. And it was a math teacher, an English teacher. He was a social studies teacher, and they taught me so much. So I would suggest to new teachers, find people who you can relate to, who will help you along the way. Observe other teachers teaching. Let them observe you. I think what was really telling for me was the first time I had to give a lesson on television, educational television. And I saw the broadcast, and I said, oh, my God, I said that. I did this expressions. Because you got to watch your body language and your micro expressions and whatnot. And we didn't have the videotape cameras that they have today. So I think it's very valuable that you get yourself videotaped. So you can watch yourself and have others critique what you're doing, your peers.
You know, one year, that's what our school administrator had us do as our evaluation. We had to record ourselves, and then we had to write an evaluation of ourselves after watching the recording and saying things that we noticed. And it was very weird because I didn't even realize some of the things that I was doing in the video. And I was like, God, I said that? Or I was talking to this side of the room the whole time. And so, yeah, it was definitely very eye-opening to have an experience like that.
Yeah, what was nice was one of my former students wrote to me, couldn't believe that she saw me on TV. You haven't changed.
So this is a kind of a question we ask. Actually, I want to go back to that last question for just a second. I think we've asked that to all 30 of our guests now, and we've never heard that answer like that. And I think that's super important, is just to grab someone that's a mentor, someone that's an awesome teacher in the building, and learn from them rather than just your next door neighbor. You know, and sometimes you kind of get your next door neighbor, your team partner, or whatever. You really need to seek out someone that's amazing, and I think that's really helpful. I think that's just fantastic advice.
I think many teachers don't get the support, help, and encouragement that they get in their own schools, but they will get it on Twitter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way.
We are tremendous. We're a family on Twitter. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need anything, use the right hashtag, you get responses, you get answers, you get help.
Yeah, I fully agree.
When did you get started on social media, Jerry? We didn't even ask that.
I don't know. Someone suggested, I think it was 2009, said that I should get into social media. I said, you have so much to share. And I started on Facebook, but I really could not get any real contact. I got some contacts in England, but I really couldn't make any connections at that time. And I signed up for Twitter in May of 2009, but I didn't do anything about it until that summer. Then I stumbled on something called EdChat, which had just started. and you know, when you first get on, you're scared. You know, you're afraid to put something out there. It's like jumping into a pool because you're afraid it'll be too cold. But I tweeted out something, and someone retweeted. I said, oh, my gosh, this is great. Someone actually listens to you and whatnot. And I got hooked. Who was to believe I'd become a moderator in EdChat?
Yeah, that's great. So you have the Twitter handle CyberyMan1. Was CyberyMan already taken when you went
Thank you, exactly. I don't think I'm number one. No, CyberyMan was taken, so I had to take one.
I'm sure that guy gets requests. I'm sure that guy gets requests nonstop, you know.
Yeah.
That's too funny. So one of the questions we always like to ask our guests is, has there ever been a time in your career where you've kind of just fallen on your face and made a mistake and really just kind of step back and learn from that mistake? And I know it's kind of putting you on the spot to ask you that without prompting you first, but anything you can think of that really just like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did that.
We all have those moments. Everyone does. I mean, there's so many. I mean, no one's perfect, even though some people think they are. No, we all make – but the key is learning from your mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think also what really – I had a crazy class one year. They were wild. No one can handle this class. And I was teaching them social studies, and I'm a big believer in every night the daily homework assignment was either to read – watch or listen to the news so we can talk about the next day, the important events. And one night I was watching the local, I said, you know, we got to do a show like Eyewitness News or something. So I came back to that class the next day. I said, we're going to do a TV show together, not a TV show, a news show. And I said, I'm going to need a lot of help on this. I'm going to need all kinds of people for this. I'm going to need someone for sports, and all of a sudden you can see the kid, oh, really? I need someone for fashion? Yeah. Oh, the girl, oh, wow. Music, oh, wow. And I said, we'll need national news, local news, world news. We'll need someone for weather. Well, this one kid, the weatherman, he went nuts. He said, oh, wow, I can do the weather. I said, sure. We did this, and it was working out great, and the class was responding amazing. The other teacher said, how can you get these kids? What is going on in your class? You know, great control. The kids love you and whatnot. I said, I don't know. I guess, you know, they like what I'm doing. Anyway, this weatherman, one day, he literally pushed me aside. He said, Mr. Blumgarten, I want to take over this show. I said, go right ahead. This is the 1980s. I said, you take over, Kingsley. And he took over the show. He did something I didn't even think of. He gave the show during the lunch hour so the other teachers could see what we were doing.
Oh, cool.
I didn't even think of that. Years later, my wife will testify this. We're walking in Midtown Manhattan, and all of a sudden, Mr. B, Mr. Blumengarten, and this Kingsley comes rushing up to me. He's wearing an NBC jacket.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that amazing?
Wow. That's awesome.
But I think, you know, we got to let kids take the lead. I think it's great that we got to hear more student voice.
Student voice.
Very important. And we have to show the kids that they have, you know, you have to build relationships with kids. Quick story. The gym teacher started a track team in the school. The police officer, because we were such a violent school, we had a New York City police officer armed in our building. He and I used to talk about our track experiences in college and whatnot, in high school. So when this gym teacher said he's starting a track team, we decided to help him. And I remember the first day we had the first workout, the kid said, I want to race you, Mr. B. I said, okay, you want to race me? No problem. Now, there's no way I could beat these kids, even though they had no training, because they were really fast. I said, tell you what, let's warm up first. I ran him for a mile, and then I sprinted. Meanwhile, after the first quarter mile, I go, and I never told them I was a long-distance runner. And they said, man, you're fast. But I built that confidence in them. They saw that whatever I wanted them to do, I would do alongside them. And I showed them it's okay to make mistakes, to learn from them. And I think that's so important to build that relationship with your students. Get to know them on a personal level, too. You know, greet them as you come in the door. Hello, how are you? You know, how's your mother? If your mother was sick, how are you feeling? Or things like that. So they know you care about them. That's why I love Angela Myers with You Matter. I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. We need to do more of that. In fact, I got the assistant principal on my floor. We're on the second floor. And I got her to every day. Anyone walked on a floor in the morning during passing, we'd say, hello, how are you? Good morning, good afternoon, and whatnot. The kids used to look like we were crazy. But I think it had a great effect on the kids. Let them know you care about them.
I completely agree with you.
And we got to teach them perseverance, too. Very important to teach them perseverance. Right, Todd?
It's funny you say that because that's our lesson today in class.
Oh, was it? I didn't even see that. You tweeted that.
We want our kids to be, not to give up, not to be afraid to fail, to follow their passions. That's why I love Genius Hour and Maker Ed. I think it's great. We have to allow them time to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Let them read some books and materials. When parents used to come into the library, because the kids used to drag all the kids into the library during open school night, I had more visits than regular teachers did. But I'd say to the parents, look, what is your child interested in? Interested in rock stars and music and whatnot? Get them a music magazine. If they're interested in video games, get them a video, because they will read that. They'll get them interested. Find things that they're interested in reading and whatnot.
And I think it's also important, too, to give them time to talk about what they're going through or interested in. Because, you know, when we were doing the perseverance thing today, we are learning through our Paralympic athlete who lost both of his legs in the Afghan War, used to be a great hockey player and lost both of his legs, and now he plays on the men's sled hockey team for the United States Olympic Paralympic team. And hearing him tell his story, and afterwards my kids were like, well, you know what? I had to persevere when my parents divorced and they wanted to tell us about it. Or I had to persevere when my father or stepfather passed away last month. And you know, hearing fifth graders bring out that kind of emotion and be somewhat vulnerable in front of their peers, I think it made me think today that, you know, that's something I think that I even forget to do, is to just allow my kids to express themselves verbally, to share their stories with their peers.
Well, you first have to build community. That should start from day one. Once you have community where the kids are not afraid to say these things and their peers won't ridicule them and whatnot, I think it's great.
Yeah, it breaks down those walls and then lets the real learning happen after that happens. It's a fantastic
thing. Well, you know, I think an important thing, too, I learned, I think this is great for new teachers. We don't know what's going on in our children's lives or minds. So what I used to tell the kids, I said, look, before you come into class, as you're coming in my door, either talk to me personally if you had a fight before or it has some, there's some problem in your family, you didn't sleep, etc., or write me a little note so I will know. Because how do we know what's going on? If a kid falls asleep, you don't know that kid was up babysitting for his younger brothers and sisters all night, so the kid's tired. Yeah. The kid has a legitimate excuse for not doing their work and whatnot. But we have to know. So you have to build that up with them, either, as I said, talking to you one-on-one or giving you a note.
Well, you know, that leads great into my next question, which is, you know, can you think about a connection or an experience you had with a student or parent that's just going to stick with you forever because it was that emotionally attached?
Well, I can give you an example. Teach Meet Georgia. I was asked to be the opening speaker for that. And on Facebook, one of my former students, you know, I put it out on somewhere, and he found out I was going to be in Atlanta. He said, Mr. Blumgarten, I want to take you and your wife out to dinner. I said, what did I say? That's great. So we arranged that, and he and his wife took me and my wife out. He said, you know why I'm doing this, Mr. Blumgarten? Because you remember in the eighth grade when you said, Isaiah, either you're going to be a lawyer or a politician? He said, I'm a successful lawyer today, and I want to thank you because you helped me get into a Better Chance program. He took him out of the inner city, and I was able to write his recommendations and whatnot and get him into this program. So he had a private school education, Andover, Mass. He went on to Columbia University and law school, and it changed his whole life. And that was really emotional for me.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. It's emotional for me.
I was going to say, it's making me emotional hearing you tell the story, just thinking about having that kind of impact.
Yeah, totally cool.
You don't realize. See, that's another thing. We don't realize the impact we have on our students. At that time, they will never tell you. I remember I had a student knock on my door, a former student. He said, Ms. Blumgarten, can I talk to your classroom? And I said, go right ahead. And I introduced him as a former student. He said, class, Mr. Blumgarten doing a stock market with you? And I said, yeah, look on the back there. We're studying, I think it was Con Ed at the time, because every day the kid had to bring in the final closing price of Con Ed. He said, you know, I think it was great that he did this with our class because I learned about stocks. I got so interested, I now work for Merrill Lynch. So, you know, and I think it's important that, you know, we expose kids to practical survival skills. We're not doing enough of that. For example, the local grocery manager, you say, oh, are you bringing your class in again this year, Ms. Blumgarten? I said, every year, you know that. I used to bring my classes into the supermarket. I used to show them how to unit price, how to shop, how to use the coupons. He would have his different department managers show them how they set up the shelves and when I explained the whole process to them. But I think it was so valuable. We did the same thing with the banking, had a whole banking unit. So I think we got to do things with these kids, prepare them for the real world that they're going to experience. Another very successful program I did was law. I used to teach the kids about landlord-tenant relationships, you know, landlord-landlord, my roof has sprung a leak, don't you remember? I told you about it way last week. That's Langston News, by the way, because I built in poetry and other things in these units. And I taught them how to write contracts, how to sign, and all that stuff. Because it's important things that they don't learn. A lot of kids, I taught driver ed. I would never get in the car with those maniacs, but I taught the lecture part. And kids, you know, used to bring in checks to pay. They didn't know how to write a check. I said, you're juniors in high school. You don't know how to write a check? So I thought it was important in the 7th, 8th grade to teach these kids these skills.
Right.
It's funny, they probably still don't know how to write a check now. I guess the checks are kind of going away, so they probably still don't know. They certainly don't know how to tell time, I know that.
Pen and pencil's going away, too.
Yeah.
So one of the things...
By the way, I have a how to tell time page, don't worry.
Okay. Oh, do you?
Of course.
Awesome. I'm gonna link a kid to that. Next time I point up to my clock and they go, I have no idea, I'm gonna send it to cyberman.com. So one of the questions we always like to end on is what are you really passionate about right now in education?
There are so many things to be passionate about. There's so many. I guess I think it's blended learning. I think that's the future. I really do. In fact, my daughter teaches a hybrid or blended learning class. At least she did last year. Now it's all online, and it's driving her crazy. Yesterday she calls me up and said, Dad, you're not going to believe this. I said, what, dear? One of my students in my online class asked if we're going to have open book tests. Anyway, I think that's important. I think programming. I think that's key. I think everyone can program and whatnot. A lot of kids should follow their passions, teach them programming, mobile learning. We have to teach them how to use these devices and tools properly. I think digital citizenship is crucial in all this. Yeah. No matter what we're doing. Setting up policies. Have the students develop a safe policy for the use of their tech tools and devices. Augmented reality, I'm excited about that. I had the kids, when I first started, the kids could not read the social studies textbook. So you know what I said to them? We're going to make our own book. And those are the days of the Ditto or the Ditto machines or whatever. And I still have purple on my hands from those Ditto machines. But I gave each kid a page. They had to do the artwork and they had to do the writing for that page. And then I put them all together and I gave them that book. Now you can do digital textbooks or electronic ones. I think that's great. We should do more of that. Let the kids take the lead in doing this.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, Todd, I have a quick little anecdote. Todd and I both did the Hour of Code right before we left for break. We were done with tests, so we both did it. I did it in my 8th grade class, and Todd did it in his 5th grade class. And, you know, I saw some kids doing some great things, and then I heard today one of the teachers that we both share the same kid, she comes up, she goes, hey, do you know this kid, what's his name? He came back to me today and talked about how he learned C++ programming over the break because of that Hour of Code that you did. And I was like, that's awesome. I was literally jumping in the hallway.
That is the best homework when a kid on his own does the learning. That's the key.
Yeah, I was so
thrilled. But another great thing, and I wish every class, every school would have a student tech help squad, geek squad, I don't care what you call it, or a help desk. Let the kids, there's so many kids who know so much more than a lot of the teachers. Yep. They can help the teachers, they can help their peers with tech. Yep. They can demonstrate it, they can work with the parents, etc. Use the kids' skills. I don't care if they're elementary school, high school. Yeah, let's turn over this to the kids because we need all the help we can get, and teachers do in schools.
I completely agree. Well, Jerry, we want to thank you so much for coming on with us today. It has been so cool to get to hear your story. And get to see you and talk to you outside of 140 characters. So thank you so much for giving us some of your time today.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have a great school year. Oh, yes. By the way, one other thing. Have your students write their learning goals for 2014. What I did was every holiday I had them review it. Like the next holiday, Dr. King, look it over again. Valentine's Day, look it over again. St. Patrick's Day. But that was a good landmark for me every holiday. And I saved them even before technology. Have them look them over, save them, have them adjust them. How am I doing and whatnot to periodically review them.
I love that. I'm going to do it.
Yep, done.
Well, for those of you that are listening, we want to remind you that you can connect with Jerry on Twitter. Jerry, your website is cyberaman.com.
Yeah, you got to be able to spell cyberaman. That's the key.
And your Twitter handle is cyberaman with the number 1 at the end. Is there any other way people can get a hold of you?
Well, it's jerrycyberaman1@gmail. Okay. That's a lot to swallow, right?
Twitter's the best way.
Twitter's the best.
Well, and we want to remind our viewers that you can connect with us on EduAllStarsHQ on Twitter with the hashtag EduAllStars. You can check out our website, EduAllStars.com, for all the other 29 interviews that we've done. And you can search us out on iTunes with searching EduAllStars with no spaces.
We have some great guests lined up for 2014. I think we're already booked through February. Todd's done an amazing job of reaching out to some really cool people. On January 15th at 8 o'clock Central, we have Amanda Dykes. And on January 22nd at 7:30 Central, we have Tony Sinaitis. I think is how you say his last name. Hopefully I didn't butcher it. And then January 29th, 8 p.m., we have the original John iPad Sammy Samuelson. We go way back with iPad Sammy. Well, a year back, but we're good buds.
way back now.
I met him at TCA last year, so I think that's I don't know when you guys met, but
TCA.
Yeah, TCA, cool. So we also want to encourage people to subscribe to our podcast via iTunes and leave a rating and feedback. It really helps people get out there and listen to us that may not have heard of us otherwise. So the higher the rating, the more people that listen. It's a fantastic thing. Thanks for your time.